Culture Q is a production of Radio K, with funding support provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Hello, and welcome to Culture Q, the art show that rocks. I'm your host, Ryan Wilson. Lily Tomlin once said the best mind-altering drug is truth, so prepare to trip on these true stories from the Twin Cities art scene. Today we got stories on an African drum class at the University of Minnesota, a new twist on an old Shakespeare play, and the Jersey Shore comes to Minneapolis. This could be a situation. Tickets are free and there's no wait as we explore what's going down in the Twin Cities this week on Culture Q. When I was a kid, I went through several years of painstaking piano lessons. Too much practicing. Maybe I would have been better off learning music the way some students at the University of Minnesota do. There's no sheet music and no individual practicing. Here's Chris Marshall.
There's a great deal of music in the University of Minnesota's Ferguson Hall. A lot of orchestral, choral, some jazz, Rachmaninoff concertos, and Mozart quartets. But late on Friday afternoons, if you're walking through the School of Music, you might hear something a little different.
They're different in the way they are organized, in the theoretical basis of the musics are very different.
That's Soa Mensah. He teaches the music of his home in Ghana. And for students used to Western music, there's a lot to learn.
Like I said, the rules governing how the music is organized, how it is performed, how it is learned, is totally different from the way Western music is done. You know, I mean, in Western music, well, if this were a band or an orchestra, everybody would have a stand in front of them and they would have a score or music sheet in front of them. Now, as you can see, there's no music. Traditionally, we don't use notation for this music. This is learned by ear and by watching. You know, so the way you learn it is different. This music is always played in a group.
The group Soa teaches is 25 students from all sorts of academic backgrounds. They gather in a semicircle once a week, each with an ornately decorated African drum. They watch the hands and eyes of their leader intently. That's the Gota dance they're playing from southeast Ghana. At the focus of the semicircle is Matthew Grandboyce, a PhD student of chemistry with a passion for African music. He's a Western-trained musician, and for him, learning African music has been a bit of a challenge.
Because it's very easy for us to tap our foot to a 4-4 measure where you can't tap your foot in this music, and so we'll come by and not step on your foot, but anything you can do from stop you from doing that. So you get into those habits and you start thinking about it in basic Western music, like 4 beats to a measure. There's no measures, there's phrases of music. So sometimes people struggle, but for the most part, musicians are musicians and they can pick up on the rules pretty well.
The phrase structure he's talking about is one of the principal ways African music is different from Western music.
A phrase is kind of like the leader asks a question in music, and the response would be from another group. So when you're talking, it's kind of like a language. I say one thing, you repeat it. And as you're talking, you're both carrying on a music conversation just with different parts of that music. So when you say a whole phrase, it's basically just like a simple tag that or a loop that someone plays on a chorus. You just play that over and over and over.
But the biggest difference between these two musics is that African music really can't be played alone.
Growing up, you know, in Ghana, I've never seen a drummer who takes his drum to go somewhere alone to practice, sit alone to practice. We don't do that. All playing is in a group. So you don't practice your part and come play with a group. If you play in an orchestra, you have to go learn your part and be able to play your part alone. And then you come play with a group. No, we don't do that.
But differences aside, music is music. And for SOA, that's what's important.
I love music, and I do different musics, not only traditional African music. I have the same training as anybody who gets a degree, in European music. I went to music school. I did one graduate degree in Ghana and another one here. So I love music.
For Culture Q, I'm Chris Marshall.
This is Culture Q. I'm Ryan Wilson. A new literary magazine emerged in the Twin Cities last August called Paper Darts. Not only did I get a story out of it, I improved my poetry skills too.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate.
Ah, the sonnet, an elegant and sophisticated form of poetry. Shakespeare used it often in his works. Across the pond and some 300 years later, Robert Frost made use of the iambic style.
And on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again.
Sonnets were written all over Europe in different languages, like Italian and French. That last one might not have been a sonnet. Now, I had thought sonnets were long dead. I thought well-organized poetry had given way to Maya Angelou and Little Wayne. To my shock, sonnets are still being written today, right here in the Twin Cities. On February 16th, local literary magazine Paper Darts held a sonnet writing workshop at the Open Book in Minneapolis. Aspiring young writers met to read, write, and discuss sonnets.
So I was hoping maybe we could talk about your reactions, like what do you think of the sonnet, and how are you starting to change what you think, maybe based on this last sonnet?
Emily Waltz is a volunteer with Paper Darts and the leader of the sonnet workshop.
We were thinking originally that we could have people come in and write about their great loves and then also about terrible love gone wrong and the revenge they'd like to take, and of course we thought the sonnet would be a great form for that.
Okay, let's break down the rules of a sonnet. There are 14 lines, each with 10 syllables. Each line is written in iambic pentameter, meaning the accent is on every other syllable, like "Shall I compare thee to a summer's day?" Every other line rhymes, except the last two, which rhyme with each other. Got all that? Good. Now forget it, because modern poets don't follow these rules strictly anymore.
The great poets don't always see all the rules first and then go by them. They sort of do what sounds the best, and it turns out that they are following these unwritten rules. And so I think iambic pentameter is still popular because it lends this kind of flow to your work, having this consistent rhythm to the words. But the nice part about modern poetry is you can kind of take what you want from the form. You can be really strict or you can be really loose and creative.
To kick off the workshop, the Dilettantes and Open Books Coffee Gallery read a few sonnets. Some were surprised by modern poets' unconventional use of the style.
Would anyone have read this and been like, that is a sonnet, wow, I wouldn't have done that. You know, the last two lines rhyme, do they? Yes.
Yeah.
But
those are the ones that stood out to me.
Exactly, but I don't think if I was just reading, quickly, I wouldn't have thought it was a sonnet, which is interesting.
After a discussion, the real work began. Emily gave out a few topic prompts, and everyone attempted to write their own sonnet. I even gave it a go, writing about a beautiful stranger I came across working at Starbucks. Everyone shared their work and received feedback. I was pressured to share my poem too, although I'm sure they wish they hadn't after I read it.
A face I do not know at all appeared and asked me what I'd have to drink that day. I'm shocked and awed, her face in memory seared. I catch my breath and ask for a latte. I smile, she replies, that's $3.85.
Oh,
spicy.
Yeah.
We've all had that moment.
Let's talk about my sonnet skills. What do you think here? How am I doing?
I'm very impressed. I hope you'll be coming back for the fiction workshop. This is, I think, my favorite. I don't know. You Are My Life is a great title, but I think I like the sonnet light, this beautiful burst to stranger. That's my favorite.
Okay, well, let's be honest here now. What do I need to improve on?
Well, it is half the length of a real sonnet, but we'll overlook that for now. It's pretty good. I like your theme, and I like the slant rhyme between day and latte. I think you're really doing some creative things there. That's pretty good.
I don't know what a slant rhyme is, but thank you.
Emily brought some craft supplies, so after writing, the workshoppers decorated their poems to give to friends and loved ones. The workshop provided a place where poets and writers could meet, learn, practice, and share. It's an opportunity many don't get after they graduate, said Jamie Millard, the co-founder of Paper Darts.
Part of our major philosophy with Paper Darts is that we are rooted in a volunteer community, and we wanted to allow our volunteers to make paper darts whatever they envision. And part of that was some of our volunteers said, well, we'd really like to have a workshopping community. Once you're out of college, there's not really a place for writers to workshop their pieces. You don't have that classroom environment. And we wanted to recreate that for people beyond college. And that's how these workshops were born.
Sonnets may be a heavy topic compared to other paper darts workshops like Flash Fiction, but there were plenty of laughs and smiles. Catherine Hargreaves thought the night was a success.
It went well. It's pretty new, I think, for both myself and Paper Darts, but it's gaining momentum, and sonnets is a tough cookie to crack.
For Culture Q, I'm Ryan Wilson. The Bard of Stratford-on-Avon has struck again. Shakespeare's been dead for hundreds of years, yet the University of Minnesota keeps performing his work. There's no fresh way to do his plays. Or is there? Here's Christetta Borini.
Is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrage.
Yeah, we've heard all this before, Hamlet. I mean, it's beautiful prose, but every other high school English teacher buried us with woebegone portrayals by Sir Laurence Olivier. We want more than angst and contemplations of suicide. What about laughs, Mr. Shakespeare? What about love?
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
Enter Love's Labor's Lost by William Shakespeare, a romantic comedy performed by University of Minnesota seniors from the BFA Actor Training Program. We get to see Shakespeare's lighter side with this play. In the country of Navarre, the king and his three men swear off women in pursuit of a more scholarly life. Mayhem ensues when the Princess of France and her entourage visit, and each man falls for one of the beautiful ladies.
This proves you wise and rich, for in my eyes...
I am a fool and full of poverty.
Oh, but that you take what doth to you belong. It were fault to snatch words from my tongue.
Oh, I am yours and all that I possess.
Oh, the fool,
my. I cannot give you less.
But don't be thrown off by the old English text. Bob Galligan, who you just heard playing Berune in the U of M's production, assures us that even 400 years later, Shakespeare's creation will not alienate modern audiences.
I definitely think there's a lot to be learned from the text, and the story itself is one that is still relatable. Definitely. And, I mean, he's writing about classic things that happened in his time and things that still happen today. The entire play is about falling in love and kind of dealing with it and how each character goes about experiencing his way of falling in love or her way of falling in love And I don't think that's at all unrelatable in today's time.
And even though the text and plot are still the same, Bob tells us how this particular production is different from what Shakespeare envisioned way back in the 16th century.
So we're setting it in the 20s, which is a bit of a different take on it, which I think is interesting. But it still has to do with love, which is kind of the season that the university has chosen. But it's kind of looking at it from somewhat of a different angle. Also, the style that we're kind of doing it in, because it's not classic Shakespeare, we're not wearing, you know, Elizabethan clothing by any means.
The modern setting of the Roaring Twenties accentuates certain themes in Love's Labor's Lost. Asta Paredes, who plays the Princess of France, talks about why that is.
I think this setting is actually very perfect, the 20s or the 40s for this play, because it's really a play about lost time and regretting foolishness, and the Roaring Twenties are all about foolishness, so it's a perfect setting.
But as conducive as the setting may be, the actors have found translating Shakespeare to the 20th century limits what they can or cannot do.
It definitely is a challenge in that you have to kind of play the period as well as playing the piece. So, especially in the 1920s, for me, I have terrible posture, and they didn't in the 1920s. So that's been kind of a challenge, and also the formality that comes with, there's royalty. I'm a friend of a king, and the formality that kind of comes with being around a king in the 1920s and how your body has to respond to that is definitely a big challenge.
We have people coming in working on our movement, working on our posture. It's kind of based on like a Noel Coward kind of setting, very stylized. So when you have the movement down and you have the breath down, and especially with the costumes, like I always say, I'm coming from a Audrey Hepburn school of acting. Once you wear the dress, you're the princess. So dress rehearsals, I'll finally figure out the last component.
So to see how Bob and Asta bring it all together, along with the rest of the great cast, catch Love's Labor's Lost tonight, February 27th through March 7th. Tickets are $17 for the general public and $12 for U of M students at the door.
Whipped as pigeons peas, and utters it again when Joe got three.
Ah, he is wit's peddler, and retail.
For Culture Q, I'm Christetta Borini.
Hey, welcome back to Culture Q. This is Ryan Wilson, and we're trying out a new segment here. It's the Top 7, and joining me is Mark Thompson, the Assistant Music and Program Director for Radio K. Hey, Mark.
Nice to be here.
All right, let's do it. Mark is going to give us his Top 7 local concerts in the Twin Cities. Mark, what's number 7?
Number 7, F Knight's plan at Sauce on March 6th. Should be good. That's a cool venue. It's a new venue. Should be a good show.
Number 6.
Number 6, Solid Gold, March 5th at the Turf Club. They got a new EP out. Lots of hype.
Number 5.
Number 5 is a Radio K Presents show. It's an off-the-record thing, a band called the Wapsinipican.
Can you say that three times fast, Mark Thompson?
Wapsinipican? No, I gave you 1.5.
All right.
They're backed up by Total Babe. It's at the Kitty Cat Club. The Wapsinipican is a new band from Sean from Cloud Cult. Should be cool.
All right, number 4.
Number 4, Anders Ponders, one of my favorite local bands, playing on February 28th at the Kitty Cat Club.
Number 3.
Another Radio K Presents show. It's the Foreign Born and Free Energy. They're going to be at 7th Street Entry on March 3rd. Foreign Born, always a solid live show.
Number 2.
I'm going to hit you with another K show. We're presenting Laura Veers. It's at what I think is the best venue in this whole city, the Cedar Cultural Center, on March 2nd.
And Mark Thompson with the number 1 upcoming local concert.
You got to go with the local bands. Gospel Gossip, Magic Castles, Dante and the Lobster, 3 of my favorites. They're going to be playing March 6th at the 331 Club.
That is Mark Thompson, Radio K's Assistant Music Director, with the Top 7 upcoming local concerts of the week. Thanks, Mark.
I'm out.
Next up on Culture Q, Pauly D and Snooki may not have been in town, but that didn't stop Guido's from making an appearance in the Twin Cities. Brady Nias was all over this situation. How does a Jersey Shore nightclub materialize in an abandoned storefront in downtown Minneapolis? Simple. The Moon Goons. The Moon Goons are a party troupe, as in professional party starters. The troupe consists of Travis Stearns, Josh Clancy, and Jonathan Ackerman. I find the trio of friends in their residential studio, which is littered with Red Bull cans, cats with androgynous-sounding names, and compact fluorescent lights. According to Clancy, there's a lot that goes into making a party.
You need more, nowadays you need more than just like a DJ and music. You've got to have a cool location, you've got to have, you know, you've got to create a vibe with decorations, and it's got to be a good atmosphere.
Part of the Moon Goon's success is the mystery surrounding the troupe. While at least one of the trio can be seen performing practically every weekend, once a month, the Moon Goons throw a party of their own. It's hard to get an invite to one of these parties. The party's called Forever Young. It's marketed by flyers, word of mouth, and Facebook invitations. Where the party's going to show up is another mystery.
Forever Young is anything, basically. Yeah. We can work with any venue, we can have it anywhere.
In months past, they've had themes ranging from Wild Wild West to superheroes and even a Christmas special, often with special guests. But the Moon Goons refuse to be limited to something as formulaic as just playing music.
We'll always do that. We'll always change it. Sometimes it's going to be funny and cheesy, and then other times, you know, it might not even be a dance party. It might be like Forever Young presents Hot Dog Edition, where we're serving hot dogs, and that's all we do.
The Moon Goons are so secretive that it's surprising that anyone comes to their outings at all. But according to Clancy, Minneapolis knows how to party.
People here are nuts. They're just like, it's like a love-hate relationship, because, I mean, like, there's not really any like nice way to say it, but a lot of the times people are kind of behind in terms of what's popular in the music, but it doesn't matter. They'll still dance and have fun.
So that's how last Friday night, roughly 120 Minnesotans washed up on the Jersey Shore.
I'm Tony from the Jersey Shore.
As Jonathan put it,
it's co-opting their culture for a night.
This is what some of the guests had to say.
It's intended as like a form of material, I suppose, at this point, and a form of entertainment. Obviously, I haven't dressed for this situation.
I saw this event, and it just looked like something I'd be interested in.
Moon Goons is amazing!
Elements like a spray-on tanning booth, top 40 remixes, and a place to get your hair done Jersey style only added to the hipster irony. Add in some balloons, a light show, and you've got yourself a party to remember.
Our idea behind doing events is just making something that's memorable. It's like a party of a lifetime kind of thing.
Exactly what the Moon Goons had intended.
We like throwing parties and we like doing events, but we like to make them unique and different.
I know next month's theme, but it's off the record. Maybe if you're lucky, you'll find a flyer on the street or make friends with the right kind of people. Hopefully I'll see you there. For Culture Q, I'm Brady Nias. All zap, no Roger. Bleeding through bandanas. Older than Dan Rather. Faker than Danny Tanner. I can make up any answers. Just pack up your backup dancers. Cause the tanning beds are close to the panties of all sanitized. Santa Claus and Santa Gold. Patriot states are pacified. Passed up on the revolution. Pass the sweet potato fries. Pack up all the metamucil. So passing out will take some time. We're in recession, but disease is in remission. I paid admission, so pay me or pay me no attention. That's funny. Thought Sims said they paid. One man's trash is another man's treasure, or a couple of women's business. Meghan Manning checked out a local store that turns garbage into gold.
When you first walk in Do I Like You, located next to the Red Stag in northeast Minneapolis, you are struck by the crunch of the faux grass carpet, the giant swing in the window, and the wafting smell of locally produced body products. The more time you spend browsing, however, the more you are struck by the aura of two women that love and believe in what they do.
We have AstroTurf and a big swing and things that hopefully inspire people to make their life prettier. I'm really proud of our artists, so I'm just like, oh, so excited to see people, you know, start their own little business and make their own little niche. We have a really great personal relationship. Most of our artists are crafters, you know, this isn't their profession, this is their hobby. So we completely understand when You know, it's like, you guys, it's going to take me a little while. My kid is in this play, and I don't have time to work on my stuff for 2 weeks, you know? Life happens to all of us, and we, you know, like, we're pretty good at rolling with some punches.
And because we sell on consignment, the artists come in, and they check in with us, and we get to know everybody, so it's really fun.
We've met awesome people.
Yeah.
Awesome people. In fact, one of them's here right now. I saw her wandering. There she is.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Marley makes those big fabulous hoops down there. With the
lace.
With the lace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's somebody we're pretty proud of.
In fact, owner Sarah Sweet and Angela Lessman feature work from a long list of artists that they can be proud of.
Adam's got stuff over there, you're right. Amy Rice has stuff. Hazel and Melvin's room.
The sock monkey lady.
That's how people kind of know. We have t-shirts by Campfire, which are, they're not produced locally, but they have really researched the area and offer, you know, specifically local-based t-shirt type ideas.
Body products by Bodylish.
We have Too Many Suitors, who has a Somebody in Minneapolis Loves Me t-shirts, and she also has some wall prints and things here that sell really well.
Giraffe does coasters and trivets. She's really popular in the craft market.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Broussegard also does screen printing apparel, as well as kitchen products, home decor, stationery stuff.
Emily Kircher, recycling artist. She's the one that did the bottle cap necklace that you're wearing.
Well, I've been caught. But last October, I just couldn't pass up the necklace with a black Siamese cat lurking at the bottom of a Budweiser cap. My slightly impulsive fall acquisition, however, is really what I Like You is all about.
Our goal is to have things that appeal to and are affordable for everybody. You know, there are small things, and small things enhance your life just as much as big things do. So, I mean, small things for a prettier life, I think that fits pretty well.
The owner's mantra, small things for a prettier life, really has taken shape since the pair moved their shop to Northeast Minneapolis from 42nd and Nicollet last April.
Oh my God, where do we start?
The neighborhood, first of all, is fantastic. Northeast Minneapolis it's about the arts and it's about community. So we've been welcomed really well by the neighborhood. And our space, physical space, is so much bigger. Our square footage for the retail space was like 600 square feet, and now we have
a lot more than
600.
I have no idea what the retail section is right now. But we also have room to grow, you know. Now we have 3 12 by 6 foot tables for classroom instead of having nowhere for classes. And to me, it feels homey. You know, it doesn't feel like things are being shoved at me. I get to kind of wander around, and things are repurposed. Things are kind of born all over again, which is, it's kind of nice to see.
And there's a lot in here, but it's also pretty open and spacious.
It's a very good move.
Because of this larger space, I Like You will be offering classes beginning late this spring, ranging from screen printing to cake decorating. No experience necessary, just check their website, ilikeyouonline.com, for details. For the moment, this neighborhood brick-and-mortar Etsy and its owners, Sarah and Angela, just keep chugging along.
We have no upcoming events, which actually feels kind of good. We're just kind of plugging along every, you know, trying to make it better every single day.
I think it was Allie Shops put in one of her descriptions, the little shop that could, and I feel like we are always chugging along, and we are the little shop that could.
Absolutely. Yeah.
For Culture Q, I'm Megan Manning.
That brings us to the end of Culture Q. Today you heard stories from Chris Marshall, Christetta Borini, Brady Nias, Megan Manning, and me, Ryan Wilson. Check us out on the internet at RadioK.org and tune in for more reasons why the Twin Cities rock. Next time on Culture Q. Culture Q is a production of Radio K, with funding support provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.